The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 footlong deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any footlong on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ah, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any footlong for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes footlong snacks. Limited time.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a pile of slugs held together with scotch tape and spite to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments, and the logical fallacy we're taking another look at this week is inconsistent comparison, also known as unfair comparison or faulty comparison. Pile of slugs with scotch tape and spite.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I can't lay claim to that. That's from the excellent shower cap, John Luzar.
Right.
Who writes a blog about political news every week, and it's very funny.
So good.
Yeah, it's great. And inconsistent comparison. Mm. This is one that we did way back in the very early days. Yeah. This was episode
163 episodes ago.
Yeah.
What?
Back in 2018, when we were young and fresh and sounded a lot worse than we do now. I went back and listened to it a little bit. It's very kind of hollow sounding. It's not great.
Oh, okay. We weren't. Yeah. We haven't grown into our rich plummy voices.
I think it's largely the equipment. I think we were both little baby podcasters. We didn't know really what we were doing, but also the equipment we were using was not as good. So
it was like my first
Fisher Price
my first podcast kit.
Inconsistent comparison is when you compare two things to make a point and you do it in a way that isn't really fair. Those two things aren't actually comparable, or you're comparing it in a way that isn't fair to the point that you're making.
Right, right.
So our first example is from one of Trump's many attempts to downplay COVID.
You know, in many cases, when you catch this, it's very light. You don't even know there's a problem. Sometimes they just get the sniffles. Sometimes they just get something where they're not feeling quite right. And sometimes they feel really bad. But that's a little bit like the flu. It's a little like the regular flu that we have flu shots for. And we'll essentially have a flu shot for this in a fairly quick manner.
So he's saying that because some of the symptoms are a bit flu-like, and when you get the flu, sometimes you feel really bad, sometimes it's not as bad, and you get the sniffles, and it's kind of quite similar in that way. Therefore, don't worry about it. It's just like the flu. You know, you get a shot for the flu, you'll get a shot for this in a very short period of time.
Like you do the flu, it's just like the flu. Don't worry about it. Apart from the fact that the flu kills a lot of people.
The flu does kill a lot of people, but COVID kills a lot more people than the flu. And that's really what people were worried about, was the dying. People weren't that worried about the sniffles. It was mostly the dying.
And
this was February 26th. This was a press conference he gave at the White House February 26th. And by this point, he knew full well that this was not the flu. This is him talking to Bob Woodward on the 7th of February.
It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus. And then I say, well, is that the same thing? This is more deadly. This is 5% versus 1% and less than 1%, you know, so this is deadly stuff.
So he knew full well that those two things are not reasonable comparisons to each other. If you say it's like the flu, you're giving the impression that it is much less deadly than it actually is, and therefore not something you need to worry about. And by doing that, he killed a lot of people. Because he downplayed it and made people say that the people who were telling you to worry about it were doing scaremongering and not acting along the lines of science. They were in the wrong, and Trump knew best.
I wonder if there was any government in the world anywhere that actually just told it like it was.
New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern was like, no, shut everything down. This is not
don't
okay.
Don't let anyone in.
Yeah.
And also, actually, in my experience, insofar as I edited a movie about the response in the Rohingya refugee camps in Bangladesh, on Cox's Bazar, on the kind of big beach there that became a massive refugee camp, I think there were something like nearly 100,000 refugees there, and they had 8 deaths because they were, this is going to be absolutely deadly, and they did this amazing truth-based thing and said, yep, you just need to wash your hands, do this stuff, blah, 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 because in a refugee camp where you've got poor sanitation, poor roads, poor social distancing, they ran this campaign where they'd have kind of community minstrels singing songs about COVID and washing your hands and all that kind of stuff. Imams. It was amazing.
So our second example is from Russian agent Tucker Carlson when he visited Moscow.
He's actually in Moscow. Okay.
Yeah. He actually went to Moscow. He interviewed Putin and sent back reports for American media about how great everything is in Russia and how all the things you've heard about how evil they are is
terrible.
Nonsense. Yeah. And actually it's the American government that's evil.
Biden's government.
Yeah, Biden's government. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Because he's a dick.
Yeah.
He went at one point to a Russian grocery store because people have seen the whole bread lines and hardship no food being available. And it turns out that's not true anymore. There's food aplenty, and it's cheap as chips.
I went from amused to legitimately angry. So we were guessing what this would cost. Everybody hears from the United States buys groceries, and we didn't pay any attention to costs as we were just putting in the cart what we would actually eat over a week. And we all came in around $400. It was $104 US here. And that's when you start to realize that ideology maybe doesn't matter as much as you thought. Corruption. If you take people's standard of living and you tank it through filth and crime and inflation, and they literally can't buy the groceries they want, at that point, maybe it matters less what you say or whether you're a good person or a bad person. You're wrecking people's lives in their country, and that's what our leaders have done to us. And coming to a Russian grocery store, the heart of evil, and seeing what things cost and how people live, it will radicalize you against our leaders. That's how I feel anyway, radicalized.
So he and his crew supposedly put enough food in the cart for 4 people for a week. Like family of 4 for a week.
Yep.
They end up with 44 items we see on the till as they go through on the checkout. It comes to 9,815 rubles, which at the time, he says, $104.
Mm-hmm.
$400, I mean, that sounds like a lot for a family of 4 for a week.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to shop for a family of 4 and I never spent anywhere near that amount on our groceries. But okay, the amount that they reckon that they got of food and groceries.
Because they eat a lot. They are, well, we know from the death of men.
Yeah.
It is serious. A lot of eggs and meat.
They estimated how much it would be. They reckoned it would be $400.
Yeah.
It came to $100. And therefore, Russia is doing things right. Even if they may not be good people, they're not screwing you at the grocery store. You know, it's super cheap, $100. Mm. Whereas our leaders, the US leaders, i.e. Biden, even if you think he says the right things or is a good person, he's ruining your lives because he's causing grocery stores to charge 4 times as much as Russian grocery stores. So in terms of comparison and why this is an inconsistent and unfair comparison, he's suggesting that this is to do with standard of living. And what he's not doing is comparing the whole thing of being a person living in Russia to being a person living in the US. And one of the most important things of whether you can afford groceries is how much you earn.
Yeah.
So they spent 9,815 rubles. The median salary in Russia in January 2023 was 43,500 rubles, or $460 a month.
Wow.
So if you'd shopped there 4 times, 4 weeks in a month.
That's it.
Yeah, that's $416. So you've got $44 left for the rest of the month for rent for everything else.
Heat and light.
Yeah. I feel TV like that's not going to be enough. So the average salary, the median salary, not the average, because some people being oligarchs raises the average, but the median salary in Russia at the time was $5,531 for the year.
Whoa.
The median US annual salary was $48,060.
Yeah.
That's a lot more than four times the Russian salary. So it's, as a percentage of your earnings, people in the US are significantly better off at being able to afford those groceries.
Even at $400.
If they did cost $400 at a US grocery store. But what he's saying is the Russians have it so much better because it's cheaper in Russia. The comparison does not work if you don't include all of the variables.
Yes, yeah. So what he's comparing is the grocery bill compared with the grocery bill rather than the percentage of your earnings that that grocery bill represents.
Yeah. So our final example in the section is from Candace Owens. This is a tweet where she posts a table of pre-vaccine deaths from various diseases. Basically, she's being anti-vax. She says, virtually no one was dying of measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, tetanus in the United States. It's insane that parents don't know this and genuinely fear these diseases so much that they put their children at risk for cancer, seizures, lifelong mental impairment, autoimmune disorders, and sudden death.
When were...
She's saying virtually no one was dying before vaccines.
Oh, okay, right.
That, I think, is the point that she's making.
Right.
Because she's posted this table of pre-vaccine cases and deaths. And for measles, for example, it's 440 a year in the, on average in the US. For diphtheria, it's 1,822. Whooping cough, pertussis, just over 4,000 and so on. So she's saying that's virtually no one. Still thousands of people a year dying from these diseases. But in order to establish the fallaciousness with regard to this particular fallacy, we have to, first of all, pretend that she's right. That cancer, seizures, lifelong mental impairment, autoimmune disorders and sudden death are a risk of getting vaccinated.
Yep.
They're not,
but
there are side effects in a very small number of cases.
Yep.
The side effect risk of getting vaccinated pales in comparison to the benefits. But if we assume she's right about those being risks, she's not comparing it fairly because she's saying virtually no one was dying of these diseases. And parents are prepared to risk bad outcomes like seizures, etc.
Yeah.
That's not the same as death.
Yes.
Death is in her list.
What's the, what are the non-death effects
that's
of
that's
getting
the point. That's
measles,
the point.
Mumps, rubella, chickenpox and tetanus?
Many of those things carry dangers that aren't just death.
Including autoimmune disorders, I would have thought.
Some can cause mental impairment, lifelong mental impairment.
Mm-hmm.
So she's ignoring all of the possible negative effects of getting those diseases other than death.
Yeah.
And then when she's looking at the side effects that she's lying about, she's including all of the negative impacts, including death. And that's unfair because the two sides are not comparable.
Yes.
That's even if she was right about the side effects, which she isn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, we'll start with the leader of the Tory party, and I say that in a way that implies she ought to know better, Kemi Badenoch, who, whilst giving a bad Enoch-like, pound shop Farage-like, and thereby even more nickel-and-dime store Trump-like speech to a hall of white racists conflicted about Kemi's Nigerian roots at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship right-wing gathering in London last week, inconsistently compares people.
Millions of people all around the world want to live in the West because they want the benefits. However, some of them bring behaviours, cultures and practices that will undermine the West and the values that helped make us great. They find common cause with our useful idiots who don't appreciate their own inheritance. A country cannot be successful if its people and its intellectual elite don't believe in it. This means dealing with the poisoning of minds that is happening in higher education. We cannot support all those who wish to come to our country. We have no obligation to do so. The British people must come first.
Don't clap. Apart from being a horrible, hateful right-wing speech, the likes of Enoch Powell. Here's the comparison she's setting up. The British people are apparently better than the people that are coming into the country, but not all British people, because the useful idiots and the intellectual elites, which she distinguished from its people, and those who are responsible for poisoning the minds at a higher education level, all of those, well, they aren't. They are better than the British people. The British people must come first. And if you're going to compare with other people, except not the ones I've just compared the undesirables to, because they're not British people, obviously, because there's a hint of no true Scotsman in there. So there's these people coming over from not Britain, and the British people, except the ones that I've just denigrated, where does she fit in as the immigrant daughter of a middle-class Nigerian family who was recently at pains to call herself working class because she once worked in McDonald's? And I think this is because, therefore, she can lead her own Maoist-style cultural revolution and get the useless idiot, the unintellectual, the proletariat British people who haven't had their minds poisoned at a higher education level and do appreciate their own inheritance, to follow her and kill all the glasses-wearing bourgeois intelligentsia. So she's kind of saying, here are the British people, but these ones aren't British people.
I don't know who she means by the useful idiots who don't appreciate their own inheritance.
Anyone who sides with the idea that immigration is good for the country.
So is your own inheritance Britishness? Is that what?
I think it probably is, yes. If you aren't a racist George Cross wielding skinhead braces wearing DM tight jeans protector of statues, then you don't appreciate your own inheritance.
See, it feels to me like maybe the people she's talking about actually are the ones who do appreciate their own inheritance in the form that they acknowledge their privilege.
Right.
They recognize the privilege they have from their inheritance, and therefore understand that not everyone gets that by being born there, and that other people are valuable too, and it shouldn't be down to that random happenstance. That feels like the people that she's describing is actually the ones who get that the inheritance is a random thing that happened to you and gave you privilege.
Yes. So actually they are fully appreciative of their inheritance, and it's a source of their largesse.
Absolutely.
Because they're but for the grace of God, go you. Yeah. So who are we to prevent you from coming into our country and being embraced by this great country?
And did she not go through higher education?
Well, absolutely. Of course she did.
She was just immune to the poisoning of minds.
Apparently, because she's come out with this shit. It's really hateful.
Oh, yeah. It's awful.
Can only be compared with the idea of the Cultural Revolution, whereby anyone who is smarter than you, it's Lord of the Flies all over again. But because she is one of the intelligentsia, she's got to make herself into a blue-collar worker, a working class, been in McDonald's, despite the fact she's in charge of an ancient political party and earns an absolute fortune.
Yeah, an ancient political party which conspicuously has not done anything for working people ever.
Yes.
That specifically and literally oppose the party that's named after the Labour movement.
So in identifying all of these people, what she's saying, you, the lumpen proletariat, rise up and swallow, but not me, because I'm one of you. Rise up and kick over all this stuff so that I can be in charge of you. It's like King Rat, isn't it?
It's really hard to find a part of society that she fits into that isn't also one she hates.
Yeah. Well, that's why she's very artfully rebranding herself as a common worker. In the way that Farage does, in the way that Trump does.
Hates them too, let's face it.
Yeah, of course she does, because otherwise you'd be in the Labour Party. Okay, Second example, leading on from the similar kind of idea, Liz Truss thinks that immigration was amongst the reasons that people didn't vote Tory in the last election.
Why did people in Britain not vote Conservative? Because they felt worse off after 14 years of Conservative government. They were also frustrated by the very high levels of immigration our country had. Those are the fundamentals. And yet very few people in the Conservative Party seem willing to debate the fundamentals that are wrong.
So she was right about the first bit. People were pissed off.
Yeah.
14.
Yeah.
They were
yeah, weirdly
off
found myself agreeing
years
with Liz Truss there.
Yeah, yeah, that bit. But then she kind of, then she went on to, oh yeah, no, well, migration, they were fed up with migration being very high. No, they were fed up with the idea that you had implanted in the people, because you kept talking about it. It's not true that they didn't debate the fundamental. They debated it to the nth degree, such that Kerry Badenoch is now saying those kinds of things. So here's the comparison. She just says the very high migration. Well, well, compared with what? What's the other side of the comparison? And yes, the net migration, which is the number of people left over once you've taken away the people that left the country from the people that arrived into the country, was quite high in 2024. It was 780,000, which is higher than it had been, but it's fairly level with France and Germany post-COVID and post-Ukraine invasion. But if you look at the percentage of foreign-born population as part of the total population in 2023, because that was the latest figures, according to the OECD, the UK is slap bang in the middle of 35 countries on 15%. So 15% of the total population is foreign born. And we're below Netherlands, Spain, Estonia, Belgium, Ireland, amongst other European countries. Australia, which is often touted as having a strong immigration stance, has a foreign born population twice the size at 31%. Fundamental to the problem of immigration, as far as the Tory party and Tory voters, right-wing voters are concerned, is not the numbers per se, but the perception that too many brown people are coming over here, which is the subtext of Kemi Badenoch's stance and the full-on bloody text of Farage's stance. In the year ending March 2015, for instance, EU citizens contributed between 59% and 77% to migration. Post-Brexit, that contribution became a negative figure because they all had left, basically. And the gap was filled by people from non-EU countries. Most of them arrived for work purposes, to fill all the roles that foreign-born EU workers had filled. So those arriving for work purposes were 18%. Their dependents were 29% in the health and care industry. Also, international students and their dependents accounted for 38% of the increase in non-EU immigration, because UK universities started to recruit students overseas more actively as their financial situation deteriorated.
Yeah. Natural.
Because the lack of EU students.
Yeah, because foreign students in UK universities pay much higher fees than British students. And so a lot of the universities make a significant amount of their revenue from foreign students. And if the EU students.
And the whole freedom of movement for the EU students.
Because of freedom of movement. Yeah, because Brexit restricted their freedom of movement. That means that they need to find those students elsewhere.
Countries outside of the EU, where people are a different colour.
Yeah. If only someone could have predicted stuff like that happening before Brexit and told Boris Johnson.
So basically, they're just mobilising the net migration figure as the thing to blame for all of the ills. So our third example, Liz Truss thinks the Tories would have won in 2024 under her leadership instead of Sunak.
Do you think that a Tory party led by you would have done better than a Tory party led by Rishi Sunak at the last election?
Yes, because when I was in number 10, reform was holding at 3%.
Right.
By the time we got to the election, I think they got 18% because we promised change that we didn't deliver. Without the support of the parliamentary party, it was very, very difficult for me to get my changes through.
Basically, she's saying that when I was in office, Reform were polling at 3%, and at the general election they got 18%, and that's why she would have won, because of course she would have held them to 3%. It was all down to Sunak that they got. But if you look at the Politico poll of polls on October the 20th, 2022, the day she resigned, yes, it's true that Reform were on 3%, but the Tories were on 22%. And Labour were on 52%. Mm-hmm. On election day in July the 4th, 2024, the Tories under Sunak were on 24%. Labour were on 34%. So if you're going to compare the polls, then sure, you're consistent looking at Reform. Surely you should be consistently looking at the performance of your own party. So how does she explain that the Tory party had polled more under Sunak on election day than under her when she was in office the day she resigned? Was the Tories' rise as a result of Reform surge, or was it Labour's fall? Yes. Or was it to do with other factors? Yeah. It's like saying when I was in office, I was 2 years younger than I am now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cum hoc fallacy, because she's just saying, well, this happened when I was there, therefore it was because of me. And Reform rose under Sunak, and therefore it's because of Sunak.
Yeah. It's been 21,300 odd hours and 49 days since you gave your votes to me. Now I spend all my time finding people to blame. Since you took your votes away. Since Cammy's come, I can't do nothing I want. Or seem whoever I choose. Dinner in a Trumbo restaurant, but nothing, I said nothing, convinces me she's in charge, 'cause nothing compares, nothing compares to me. To the party and guess what they told me. They said, girl, you better shut your mouth no matter what you do. But they're just fools, 'cause nothing compares, nothing compares to me. 'Cause wild fallacies, wild fallacies from me. Wild fallacies, wild fallacies from me. Liz Truss there with Sinead O'Connor. Nothing compares to me, to you.
Can't believe you ripped up a picture of the Pope while that was playing. It's just...
Oh, I did, absolutely. Yeah.
So... in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from The Good Wife.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, Alicia is the lawyer for a servicewoman who was the victim of an attempted rape by a private contractor who was stationed with the military. And in the US, under military law, service people can't civilly sue the military or members of the military. But this guy wasn't actually a member of the military. He was a private contractor.
Mr. Hood, let's discuss your role in these war zones. You not only provide support for the military, you essentially fight alongside them.
Essentially. The American military is understaffed. There aren't enough personnel to fill all the combat needs. That's why Martinell, Blackwater, and now Academy fill the gaps.
But in the field, your employees answer to the military hierarchy.
Yes. Without the chain of command, there would be anarchy.
So these lawsuits and these subpoenas, they have a tendency to complicate the pursuit of national interests.
Definitely. Take, for example, this subpoena of the witness, Ricky Waters.
The attempted rapist, Ricky Waters.
Excuse me, Your Honor. That is uncalled for.
Yes, Mrs. Flurick, please refrain.
The witness, Ricky Waters, trained soldiers in counterinsurgency techniques. If he isn't in Afghanistan, American lives will be endangered.
Thank you, Mr. Hood.
So the lawyer and the witness there are trying to compare private contractors to active military service members mm-hmm. in such yeah. a way that means that they would access the same immunity from civil lawsuits as a soldier yeah. would. And in doing so, what they're saying is, well, they serve alongside the military, they fight alongside them, they take orders from the military chain of command. Therefore, they should be considered members of the military for the purposes of whether they can be sued by a service member or not.
Yeah.
And Alicia, she's on the other side, points out that actually, while there are things that you can compare and say, yes, they are like members of the military, they're not members of the military because there are other rules that don't apply to them. Like, for example, mm-hmm. they can disregard orders without being court-martialed and things like that, which means that actually, if all of the rules don't apply to them, then they shouldn't benefit from the same advantages yep. that military members get.
There's a large amount of cherry-picking that goes on with inconsistent comparisons mm. because you just pick the bit that you want to apply.
Absolutely.
Or you pick the bit that you don't want to apply.
And usually the key to it being fallacious is that the bit that really matters, you ignore.
Yeah. Yes, and yes, yes.
And
yeah.
when you're comparing them, you choose things that aren't necessarily what people would worry about in that situation.
Yeah.
So our second example is from a film, a documentary in 2006 called Who Killed the Electric Car?
100 years ago, there were more electrics on the road than there were gas cars. For many people, electric cars were the car of choice. They were quiet and smooth and could be charged at home. Gas cars, by comparison, required cranking and produced exhaust.
So those things are true, but there are other important differences that need consideration when you're wondering why early electric cars in the early 1900s didn't then become yeah. the dominant thing on the roads, which is not because yeah. the oil industry paid people to not let them become the dominant thing or whatever. Because
yeah.
he says yeah. that there were more electric cars than there were gas cars at the turn of the century.
Mm.
That's true. But there were more steam-powered cars than there were electric cars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that yeah. really isn't that big of a deal. It yeah. wasn't. They weren't the most common ones.
Yeah.
And yes, they were favoured by many households, but those households were the very rich people because the electric cars right. were very expensive. They were typically yeah. large and luxurious and kitted out more than petrol cars. Also, yes, they could be charged at home. But that's yep. the only place they could be charged because there was absolutely right. no electric infrastructure.
Exactly, yeah. And it can only be charged if you had electricity at
yeah,
home.
Yeah, well, that's true. But yeah. but it's convenient to charge it at home, but it's not convenient because they only had a range of like 50 miles and
right, yeah.
there's nowhere else to charge them.
Yes, so you could only go maximum of 20 yeah. miles in order to know that yeah, you could get back home
that's
again.
That's the main reason why they didn't dominate is yeah. because in the 20s, the road network was being expanded and meant that mm. people could travel further and travel faster. And electric cars just didn't have the range that gas cars had. Alongside, yeah. at the same time, large underground gas reserves being discovered in various countries that meant the price of gas meant, certainly over long distances, gas cars were significantly more efficient and economical than electric cars. So, yes, they had advantages, but there's all kinds of other things that factored in that weren't mentioned yep. in that documentary as issues of why there was a disparity and gas cars became the main thing for the next yep. century. So, sticking with cars, we have a tongue-in-cheek ad from the 70s from Citroën yep. 2CV. There were a few in the US, but I don't think they were very popular. So how would you describe a 2CV? Is there an analogous US car?
Well, I guess the VW Beetle was similarly advertised.
I guess so.
It's colloquially known as the tin snail. Yeah. You know, it's a people's car.
It's a 2 horsepower.
That's the CV, Chauffeur.
Yeah. Small, cheap car.
Yeah, I guess it, basically. Yeah. The tongue-in-cheek nature of this ad is very similar to those of the VW Beetle in the 70s, where they, you know, they're kind of up against whatever Cadillac was doing at the time. And then you've got this, you know, the VW, which is made of lots of other spare parts of other VWs, because they were kind of infinitely replaceable and it was all tiny and fuel efficient and all that kind of stuff. But ugly and cheap and, you know, until Herbie came along, had a terrible reputation for being nasty and Hitlerish.
Yeah, Herbie did a lot of good PR for Beatles.
He did a lot of good PR. And the 2CV was kind of the people's car of
French
France.
Car.
It was developed to be a runabout on the farm, and it's got really advanced suspension, which now turns up in all sorts of other cars because it was designed to be able to drive across a ploughed field holding a basket of eggs without losing any.
So this ad, it's a print ad.
Yeah.
And it's comparing the 2CV to 3 other cars.
Yeah.
The large type says faster than a Ferrari, as many wheels as a Rolls Royce, and more room than a Porsche. And then in smaller type, under the faster than a Ferrari, it says, travelling flat out at 71.5 miles an hour, the Citroën 2CV will easily overtake the Ferrari Mondial travelling at 65 miles an hour.
Nice.
Yeah. It's faster.
Yeah.
Providing the Ferrari goes slower than it.
Goes slower. Yeah. Yes. Excellent.
Yeah. And it has as many wheels as a Rolls Royce, same number of wheels, 4 wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you choose a sports car with a particularly small trunk space, then you can say, it's got more room. It's got more room than a Porsche. And so you can fit more luggage in there. They've deliberately, obviously, picked the things that they can say about their car compared to these other luxury cars that mean it's better. Yep. And with Ferrari, they really had to shoehorn the speed thing.
That's great, isn't it? It could have been any Ferrari.
Absolutely.
Really.
Yeah.
But that's, because it could easily overtake it if it was stood still. Yes.
So before we move on to fake news this week, a quick update on our Oscars pool.
Yeah.
Because while we're recording this a few days before the Oscars, it'll go out as the Oscars are starting, I think, pretty much.
Yeah. Yep.
So we will know then exactly how many people have entered our Oscars pool and how much money we are
donating.
Thank
you very much if you have entered. And you're up against us and our massive knowledge. There's an inconsistent comparison right there. We did. If you're a patron, then you would have had access to our hugely lengthy overview.
Epic. It was longer than The Brutalist.
Yes, it was longer than But whereas The Brutalist only managed to deal with one film, we dealt with 50-odd in the same length of time as it took The Brutalist. Not quite, because Jim edited a third out of it. But yeah, so thank you for entering. And as we stated at the time and on previous episodes, if you entered, we would have made a donation to our chosen charity, which was
Elevated Access.
Yes, Elevated Access, which provides out-of-state healthcare,
gender-affirming care and reproductive healthcare via flights from states where it's not available to states where it is available with volunteer pilots.
Yeah, exactly. So we were able to insert figure here.
Yeah, so Jim from the future will now tell you exactly how many people entered and how much money will be going to Elevated Access. Yes, it's Jim from the future here editing this episode, and it's mere minutes to the Oscars, and I can officially announce that we had 16 entrants into our Oscars pool this year, which is a record number, and not everyone completed their picks before the deadline, so it means they won't actually get a score, they won't challenge Mark and I for the crown, but it does mean that they count in terms of our donating, and so we will be donating with the match from my employer, $160 to Elevated Access.
So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
The true measure of the score is actually that I've played many more games of this than I appear to have won. But that's because we should be comparing how many times has Mark played. Just that, not compared to anything involving winning, just number played. That's it. It is. It's true.
Yeah, so that would, like your second example, I think, be an incomplete comparison if we're being really technical about it.
Okay.
She said that it's very high without saying what it's very high compared to.
Yes.
So these quotes are all from Trump's explanation of how he's going to fix air traffic control, given a few issues that they've been having recently. He obviously blamed it on black people, mostly.
Yeah.
And then said that he was going to fix it all and it would be much better in the future.
Right.
So here's the things he said about how that was going to work.
Yeah.
Statement number one. We're all going to sit down and do a great computerized system for our control towers. Brand new. Not pieced together, obsolete, like it is, land-based. Trying to hook up a land-based system to a satellite system. The first thing that some experts told me when this happened is you can't hook up land to satellites and you can't hook up satellites to land. It doesn't work.
That's exactly how it does work.
It doesn't work, apparently.
No, because you can't hook up land to satellites. Satellites only... What?
Statement number two.
How does GPS work then? Yeah, okay. Right.
It's really a very complex thing. But in a way, it's easy to understand because you have to have a system that works. We're going to have people, total professionals, put in an unbelievable system like they have in some countries with bells and... I travel a lot, I fly a lot, and this isn't something that happens in other places, and it should never have happened.
Well, it is something that happens in other places. Yeah,
nowhere else has plane crashes. Nothing.
No. So only in America. Yeah. Only in America.
And statement number three.
Yeah.
When I land in my plane privately, I use a system from another country because my captain tells me I'm landing in New York and I'm using I won't tell you what country, but I use a system from another country because the captain says this thing is so bad, it's so obsolete, and we can't have that, so we're going to have the best system.
Right, so here's my thinking. there's an ellipsis after with bells and dot, 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 and also I'm using a sys, dot, dot, dot. Maybe those are both true, and then it's the other one, land-based system, satellite system. It's funny enough for it to be made up. It's also funny enough for it to be true. I'm not helping myself, but total professionals put in an unbelievable system like that, something with bells. Okay, so which one? Oh, I think it's one of the ones with where he stops mid-word. But which one is it? Is it the normal looking one? It's so obsolete, we can't have that, so we're going to have the best. Or is it the outrageous one? Things happen in other places. Okay, I think it's the normal one. I'm going to go for number three is the one that you made up.
Okay, so of the other two,
yeah.
Which are you more convinced by?
The land-based system to a satellite system. Experts told me you can't hook up land to satellites and satellites to land.
And
it doesn't work. Just doesn't work.
Number one.
Yeah.
It's real.
We're all going to sit down and do a great computerized system for our control towers. Brand new, not pieced together, obsolete like it is land-based. Trying to hook up a land-based system to a satellite system. And the first thing that some experts told me when this happened is, you can't hook up land to satellites and you can't hook up satellites to land. It doesn't work.
Imagine if you couldn't hook up land to satellites or satellites to land. There would be literally no point in having satellites.
Yes.
Because at some point, on the land to know what the satellites are doing or get some information.
Or you're using the satellite to get some information from one part of the land to another part of the land.
No, the satellites can only communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And land can only communicate with land.
So that whole all you need is love first satellite transmission from Abbey Road to the rest of the world, pointless, because you can't hook it up.
No. Everyone knows
this that. Guy is the president of the United States.
Yeah, but we're all going to sit down, apparently. I don't know who that involves.
Right. All of them.
Like Trump and Musk and like Jared.
And
they're all going to sit down.
Because
and come up with a great computerized system.
Yeah. Yeah. Not pieced together, brand new. And as we know, that all brand new systems to make things better, like the post office.
What you want
system.
Is not something tried and tested over years. What you want is something completely brand new.
What you want is a brand new thing that's got bugs in it that then you have to cover up for years and years and years. Yeah.
So you also think that number two is real.
Number two is the real one, yes.
And number two?
Yeah.
It's fake news.
Oh, fuck. I knew it. Knew it. Yes, there's the gag right there. I was hedging my bets with two Trump-sized jokes. But yeah, it's always the normal one that's the real one.
I might have given it away with it's really a very complex thing, but in a way it's easy. Because I sometimes do that. I mean, to be fair, he does sometimes say stuff like that. But I wondered if that was too much.
Well, it was the bells and dot dot dot.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the thing. Was it that? Oh man. Oh yes, it was toss up between as he snuck in a normal one as a distraction. So but then last time you did it, you wrote the normal one.
So number three is indeed a real thing that he said.
When I land in my plane privately, I use a system from another country because my captain tells me I'm landing in New York and I'm using a system. I won't tell you what country, but I use a system from another country because the captain says this thing is so bad. It's so obsolete and we can't have that. So we're going to have the best system.
What the fuck is this talking about?
Yeah. He's complaining about the air traffic control system in the US being pieced together and obsolete.
Yeah.
He's still using the same. If he lands in his plane, he's still using the same air traffic control system in the US.
If you've got a Japanese
if he's got something different,
it's a touchscreen rather than a headset.
But that's not an air traffic control thing, is it?
No. When you come into somebody's airspace, you're picking up whatever they're broadcasting to you to guide you in.
Kind of by definition, all of the systems that are in all of the planes all around the world have to work with all of the air traffic control systems.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to all connect up together.
And they probably just use radio. Yeah.
Well, there's beacons and things like that that make you show up on the big tin drum screens. But it's all compatible. Also, it's not the planes that he's complaining about.
No.
It's the ground.
It's because he's a fucking idiot. Stuff. We forget. Yeah. That's the thing we forget. And everybody's forgotten around the world. They're kowtowing to an absolute moron.
We've got a few social contestants. On Discord, Rondo says, one sounds like him to me, simple and incorrect. Number three might be a Fallacious Jim freestyle, but that could always just be another senile attempt at a weave. I guess number two.
Right.
Regardless, I'm eager for Trump to show us this unnamed perfect system. On Patreon, Anders says, it is on. I might crash and burn here. Number three is the one Jim's made up. One and two, it's a very complex thing, but you have to have a system that works. I, myself, pretend to throw some dice in my head and then I pick the one I want.
I'm with you, Anders. Yeah.
One-Eyed Nick says, I bet it, whatever the fuck it is, will become the Riviera of the sky. Land? Planes? Yeah, fuck it. The Riviera of the planes. Makes as much sense as anything else he slops out of his fanus, which is face anus.
Brilliant.
I'm going with number one being fake. If he mentions satellites, he has to say how his boss has the best satellites and they can connect with land or boats or sharks with batteries on their heads or anything.
Wet, dry, everything. Nice.
Steve Pickle says, I'm going to go with number two. I think the orange one would say something as stupid as one and as America bashing as three. Scott says, holy shit, two has to be real. Donald loves to say how complex something is, but somehow it's easy too, and that something else should have never happened. Sounds just like that greedy turd. Three, he clearly has no idea what he's talking about here. Definitely real. And one, must be fake. Donald would never admit to listening to an expert. Also, and I'm being generous here, some of the sentences are more or less complete. Some of them.
Some of them, yeah. See, but yes, there you go. So taken in by very complex, but in a way it's easy.
And finally, Rene Z says, this is another plan to give regular working class Americans tax dollars to Musk via government contracts. I think two is real.
Absolutely.
Didn't listen to his BS about the FAA today. I flipped my Lockheed Martin LCS Little Rock LCS-9 challenge coin and it told me that three was fake. Or was it one? Who knows? I'll choose three is fake.
I say you foxed us all. Yeah. Well, all but one.
Nearly. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 foot-long deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any foot-long on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ugh, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any foot-long for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes foot-long snacks. Limited time.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Efficiency is Not a Logical Fallacy, because, I mean, Musk's been at it again. And yep. I thought it was time to address some of the things that Doge has been doing. Well, mostly some of the things that they claim they've been doing that actually it turns out they've lied about, mostly.
Well, that's the thing that didn't occur to me, that they would do that, that I thought they would just go in and do stuff and then, you know, be awful in doing this. But what they've actually done is gone in and said they've done stuff.
Well, they've done stuff,
which makes me suspect they have that they've stuff, not done anything.
But yeah, but they are so moving fast and breaking things incompetent that charitably, I think, are always wrong about the stuff they've done. They either do a bad wrong thing. Well, I mean, that's almost a given. I'll take either out of that. They do a bad wrong thing and also sometimes are wrong about the effects of that thing when they tell you how much money they've saved.
Yes, and also how bad and wrong the thing that they said they were curing.
Yeah, they're pretty much always wrong about that. Because it turns out, while I'm sure there are efficiencies to be made in government, there are bound to be, the way to find them isn't usually to look at things that cost money and go, probably don't need that. That you need to actually...
Or look at only things that they hate.
Yeah, you need to actually investigate, well, what does this do? Who does it help?
Yeah.
What would happen if we didn't have that? How much would that cost us?
Yes.
Would there be a long-term outcome which would be negative about that? What effect will it have in the short term if we were to stop doing that straight away without considering any of these issues? Those are things they are absolutely not doing. And consequently, as we talked about last time, they ended up getting rid of nuclear scientists who maintained the nuclear stockpile and then went, oh, fuck, I didn't keep that guy's phone number to rehire him.
And
this week they fired some people in charge of monitoring bird flu and then went, oh, fuck, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And Musk, I get them mixed up. Musk, in his remarks in the Oval Office, when he held a press conference in the Oval Office and Trump just sat at his desk like a kid at the kiddie table while the adults talked.
Except his kid was...
Well, Musk's kid was there
as well.
Too, at the kiddie table.
Musk's kid was saying, I fucking hate you.
Yeah.
Just kind of go,
so,
whispering in his ear, you should go now.
One of the things that Musk said then, I thought, no, actually, I tell a lie. It wasn't there. It was at the other unbelievable thing that happened.
Oh, with the chainsaw.
No, not the chainsaw. I mean, there's a lot of them.
Right.
It's fair that it's going to take a little while. If I say...
It's the one where he was off his...
If I say it's the unbelievable ketamine-fueled thing that Musk did last week, there's going to be a whole list. Yeah. We're going to need to narrow it down.
The whole list of them.
This one was where he attended a cabinet meeting, even though he's not in the cabinet, and he kept getting up and talking.
Well,
one thing that Musk said to the press at the cabinet meeting he shouldn't have been at was that they did accidentally stop funding for Ebola research briefly, but they fixed it. So, you know, no harm, no foul.
That's all right then.
He's admitted, basically, most of the time people have said, I mean, you're really shit at this, aren't you? He has said, look, no one's going to get everything right all the time, are they? We're going to make a few mistakes, which I feel like it's that's good self-awareness that, yeah, you're going to make mistakes. But it's not a great approach when what you're doing has such an impact on all of the people that the stuff he's doing impacts.
Yeah.
That when you are trying to fire a million people and trying to save $2 trillion from a budget which has been worked out fairly closely and probably doesn't have that amount of slack in it, just acknowledging that some of the time you're going to be wrong about it, I think is a bit of an easy way out, personally.
Yeah.
I think try harder not to be wrong is what he should be doing.
Yeah. Rather than just start firing people, is you just ask where efficiencies can be made. And you'd ask all those questions like, if we were to cut this much from the budget, fire this many people, what would the impact be?
Absolutely. You'd get people who knew what they were talking about, who had at any point had anything to do with the government to investigate that stuff over a period of time and report back to you about it, rather than getting big balls and the racist kid they fired for his racist tweets but then rehired to just randomly start slashing at the workforces of various government departments. But this is hell, so that's what they did.
And then they lied about the efficiencies.
Well, they were very transparent. They set up a website. They said that they would put all of the things that they did on their Twitter account, X account, they probably called it, because they're, you know, wrong. But they also made a website, and they put up lists of all the things and the amounts of money they saved, and they were wrong in lots of those things. One of the biggest things they got wrong was the claim that they saved $8 billion by cancelling a tech support contract for ICE. Actually, ICE's Office of Diversity and Civil Rights, which I'm frankly shocked ICE had that department.
Has had one, yes. Yeah.
But apparently they did, and they had a tech support, and it cost $8 billion, which sounds like a really expensive tech support, which is why it wasn't $8 billion.
Until you look at Musk,
So they said by cancelling it, they'd saved $8 billion, but actually it was $8 million, and it wasn't even $8 million because they already spent $2.5 million. So by cancelling the contract, they saved about $5.5 million instead of $8 billion. So only three orders of magnitude out.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah. So not only are they being idiots about what they're cutting, they're also lying about what they've cut and the savings that they've made to justify their existence. Can't believe that's true, because Musk doesn't have to justify his existence to Trump. Who's he lying to?
I think it is really a kind of 50-50 whether they're lying or just wrong. I think they might just be that stupid and bad at their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, for example, they claimed to have saved the American taxpayer nearly $232 million by cancelling an IT contract for the Social Security Administration. What they did was eliminate a project to develop an ex-gender marker for the agency's internal databases. So it was motivated by hatred.
Yeah.
And if you think that that project sounds like it probably wouldn't cost $232 million...
You'd probably be right.
Because they were off in their estimate of how much that would save by approximately $231 million. They saved a little over half a million, or they cut that amount by stopping that project.
By being hateful.
Yeah. So, again, like a quarter of 1% of what they claimed they'd actually saved.
But that's not just making a mistake about how much they've saved. It's just out and out telling lies.
I mean, the end result's the same, but it's hard to decide whether they're stupider or dishonest.
Yeah.
It's like, they're probably both. They're both stupid and dishonest. So which one was the cause of each of these individual things is hard to determine.
It's in the balance. 48-52.
One that's probably a lie rather than stupidity was the claim of how much they saved on Jimmy Carter's Atlanta office.
Right.
Because they listed on their website that they'd saved $128,233 on the allowance to former presidents because it closed a 7,700 square foot office in Atlanta. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but Jimmy Carter died last year.
So that would have...
So yeah, they...
They wouldn't need to hold the office open?
You don't keep getting that money.
Yeah.
And so the allowance actually ended more than last year, three weeks before Trump took office.
Of course.
So it's a bit
tricky. Well, why not take the claim for stuff that would happen anyway or stuff that happened during previous administrations? Not like Trump hasn't done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They claimed $655 million of cuts at USAID, which actually ended up when people looked into it being $18 million.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's quite a difference.
Wow.
Because it is the Department of Government Efficiency. So they're doing all this in the most efficient way. And one of the the most public things that they've done recently is to send an email to every federal employee. That's 1.9 million federal employees, asking them to justify their work.
Their continued existence.
By sending them a list, 5 bullet points of things you've done. Like, what have you achieved in the last week?
Right.
And the email didn't say this, but efficiently, Musk wrote on X that people who didn't reply would be taken as a resignation, because that's the best way to get your message out, is send an email with incomplete information and then post and then publicly on your social media account and hope that everyone just hears about it.
Yeah, of course, because he believes that he's the mouthpiece for everybody's communication requirements. So he's oblivious to the fact that since he bought Twitter, everybody's left.
Yeah,
and the stock price has tanked, and everyone's on Blue Sky now. So, and actually, he's not the center of everyone's communications universe.
Yeah. So, having said that, basically, people would be terminated if they didn't reply, because it would be taken as resignation if you don't reply. Trump was asked about it when he was in the Oval Office meeting Emmanuel Macron, and he said that he thought it was great, Elon's email. He said, "We have people that don't show up to work, and nobody even knows if they work for the government." I mean, it feels like if they didn't, they wouldn't be getting the email. So by asking them the question, "Tell us what you did this week," what he's doing is saying, "Are you actually working?" And then if you don't answer it, like, "You're sort of semi-fired or you're fired," he said. And then said,
"Right,
a lot of people are not answering because they don't even exist. There was a lot of genius in sending it. If people don't respond, it's very possible that there is no such person. Or they're not working."
The implication is that everyone he emailed to, they're being paid. There's a salary going out.
Yeah, yeah. If they don't exist,
the ones that are coming back,
you're not saving any money by firing them, are you?
It's just a whole bunch of doublespeak, isn't it?
But not everyone did reply. And part of the reason is because, regardless of what Musk and Trump said, the Trump administration, the Office of Personnel Management, who is the actual federal agency that kind of is the federal HR department,
in charge of employees of the government,
they were like, "That's not how that works. All of these departments get to do that."
They don't work for you, Musk. It's not the government isn't your company.
So they sent out a memo to various heads of department to say it is agency leadership's decision as to what actions are taken if people don't respond. And the Department of Defense, the Social Security Administration, NASA, Department of Justice, Department of Agriculture, the State Department, Department of Energy, and DHHS and the FBI all sent messages to all of their staff saying, "Don't even bother answering this stupid fucking email. We will take care of our own assessments of whether people are doing their job or not. Thank you very fucking much." And but that was not enough for Musk, because he didn't get all of the answers he got because all of the people's bosses said don't answer it. The deadline now having passed, he's going to give people a second chance. They're going to get another chance to write back before they get fired.
Right. He's going to tweet another tweet and say, you're fine. Yeah, I'm giving you a second chance.
So because there's so many federal employees, if it takes them each 10 minutes, that's years and years and years of wasted time just answering this stupid email that means nothing.
Wow. So they can actually claim the fact that they've saved all that money by not pursuing it. They can just go, yeah, Doge, we've saved this much. We've saved 5 man years of effort.
Well, he's giving people another chance.
Doing this again.
To
so
do that, they're going to have some system which knows if the people answered the first email and cancelled.
Yep.
So there's going to have to, someone's going to have to do that. No one's reading 1.9 million emails to see what people did and if they should be fired for it. It's completely pointless and stupid and isn't going to save anyone any money. It might arguably give people a reason to fire some people, but they don't need a reason because he's doing it anyway. He's firing people who are desperately needed.
There was that phenomena in the late 90s where they would get business people in to go visit a business and have a makeover of how efficient it was, and you know, like a shop or a business, a service industry or something. They would get somebody in who was a guru at this, and then they would give them a financial makeover or a business. They would have a secret employee thing, all of that kind of stuff. And the point of that was that this person was an absolute expert, had
absolutely
track record of turning businesses around, and was qualified, you know, enough to appear on television to make this thing happen, and people would sign up for it. Yes, please come along and help me make my business that much more efficient. And Trump has got none of that. Trump has got none of that. Musk has got none of that. They're not experts and geniuses. They've just gone, all right, well, I've got all this money from blood diamonds and blood emeralds. Yeah. I'm going to go and buy this computer system for paying things across the computer system. Did you write it? No, I just thought I would buy it. He's misnamed as a tech bro. He isn't.
He's an investor.
Because Trump doesn't know any better either. He's a shit businessman as well. He's going, oh, yeah, we'll get Musk in because he's done all that. And Musk is going, yeah, I'll have a go at that. And you think this is why Musk's businesses have all failed, because he's crap at it.
Yeah.
Comes in, fires everybody, and thinks that that's good, thinks that makes it efficient.
Yeah.
It doesn't, makes it a hellhole.
Yeah, if you buy a house and then you sell all of the doors and the central heating and don't bother to get
in the
fire insurance or any of that stuff, you know, you'll save money. That'd be a shit place to live.
But look, all the money we've saved.
That's the problem, is you can't only work one side of the balance sheet. You have to compare where the money is spent with what actually you get for the money. One department that has been impacted by Doge particularly is called the United States Digital Service, which is people who basically work to help other federal agencies with their kind of digital infrastructure and with data science and that kind of stuff. And when Trump came in and Musk started up Doge, there were about 100 people at the USDS, and they immediately got rid of about 40 of them. Then they started to try and absorb the USDS into Doge because their technical skills, their digital ability was useful to the Department of Government Efficiency because, you know, Big Balls can only do so much on his own.
Yeah. Yeah, a.k.a. can't do anything by himself.
But this week, of the remaining 65 people who were in the department, 21 of them resigned in a joint resignation letter.
Whoa.
And they said, we swore to serve the American people and uphold our oath to the Constitution across presidential administrations. However, it's become clear that we can no longer honour these commitments.
Wow.
They basically said that they are not prepared to work for Doge because they don't want to dismantle critical public services as part of their job. They're going to refuse.
Yep.
And maybe the remaining 44 in the department that used to have 100 people in it
will
be like, we're doing twice as much work for the same amount of pay and work for this arsehole. So maybe they won't stick around.
Well, that's a cost of efficiency for you.
Absolutely.
Man. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
We talked last time about Trump's executive order, which claimed to be about military excellence and readiness, but was really an attack on trans service members. Well, Six active duty trans service members and two others who are looking to enlist sued the Trump administration to block the EO, and unfortunately for the DOJ, the case was assigned to Judge Anna Reyes, who is the first out LGBTQ plus judge in DC's district court, and she was pissed. She asked DOJ attorney Jason Lynch, "You and I both agree that the greatest fighting force that world history has ever seen is not going to be impacted in any way by less than 1% of the soldiers using a different pronoun than others might want to call them. Would you agree with that?" And, with a straight face, he claimed he did not, in fact, agree with that.
Whoa.
She then said, "If you can get me an officer of the United States military to get on the stand and say that because of pronoun usage, we are less prepared, I will be the first to buy you a box of cigars." She wasn't done yet, though. She pointed out that the executive order calls an entire category of people dishonest, dishonourable, undisciplined, immodest, who lack integrity, people who have taken an oath to defend this country, people who have been under fire, people who have received medals for taking fire for this country. I want to know from the government whether that language expresses animus. Does that express animus? Jason said he didn't have an answer, to which Judge Reyes replied, "You do have an answer, you just don't want to give it," and provided him with a little example. She told him to sit down because she was changing the courtroom rules to bar people from the University of Virginia Law School from appearing in her court because they're all liars and lack integrity and are undisciplined and can't possibly meet the high rigours of being a lawyer for the government. Then she called him back up and asked if that was a display of animus. Following this, to show that they definitely had not understood the point of her exercise, the Justice Department made a judicial misconduct complaint against Judge Reyes, accusing her, among other things, of undermining the attorney dignity with her unnecessary demonstration. Sounds to me like she absolutely fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
But they won't get it. They won't understand that they're undermining people's dignity.
No, because they view the people who are the at the receiving end of their prejudice, they view them as less than people.
Yeah, absolutely.
The latest missive about the war in Ukraine didn't come from state news agency TASS or TV station Rossiya 1 in Russia, but actually from one of the leading contributors on one of the lesser social media sites, now apparently the sole representative of the US publicity arm of Putin's Politburo. Yes, owner of Truth Social, one Donald J. Trump, who in an astonishing switching of sides during a war is not even pretending not to be spouting Russian propaganda anymore, wielding wild accusations about Ukraine starting the war to telling Zelensky to stop whining about not being invited to the US-Russian carve-up of his country, from accusing Zelensky of being a dictator with a 4% popularity rating who's deliberately not holding elections, to demanding Ukraine hand over 50% of the rights to their rare earth metals to the US with no guarantee of any support against future invasions. Trump is indeed, as Zelensky said, with amazing restraint and dignity in a reply on X, living in this disinformation space. It seems churlish to have to fact-check Trump's pronouncement because the actual truth is self-evident in the global reporting of Russia's illegal invasion, as well as the subsequent ongoing international support and resistance that simply actually happened. When is anyone just going to deny Trump's shit to his face and stop being apologists? Even frog-faced faux farmer Farage said, "Oh, you mustn't take Trump literally," laughing it off. No, you simply must take Trump literally. He does want to join the dictators club and will throw entire nations under the Russian half-tracked bus to get what he wants. And the thing about bullies is that if someone simply stands up to them, they pee themselves and their supporters flee. Now, where's my make lamppost gallows again hat?
Yeah. And members of Congress have started asking people, Democratic members of Congress have started asking their Republican counterparts and potential cabinet members or deputy cabinet members, can you say that Russia invaded Ukraine?
Right.
And they fucking won't.
Yeah.
Like the deputy head of the DOD in his confirmation hearings, they were asking if he would say that Russia invaded Ukraine, and he was like, I don't wanna be on one side or the other of this thing. That's not for me to say.
Yeah.
It's just fucking incredible.
It's just all true. That's the thing.
Of course, it's
you could kind of point this stuff out, and then Trump will just go, "Oh yeah, well I, you know, if you want, if you want to believe that, fine. We'll give the give the permission." James O'Brien was talking about Macron interrupting Trump at some stage about some untruth he was making, and he was saying, likening it to Macron saying, "Yes, you are actually naked." And, you know, everyone else is saying, "Oh, yeah, isn't he wearing the absolutely the best, the greatest thing we've ever seen?" And Macron's pointing out to him and saying, "You are absolutely naked." Mm-hmm. And Trump, rather than going, "Oh, my God, so I am," he just said, "Well, if you want to believe that." So he's giving you permission
to do that.
You know, he's kind of, but it's not, there's nothing as a fact with Trump. If it doesn't correspond with what he wants you to hold as the truth, then he will dismiss it as a belief. He just said, "Oh yeah, well, if you want to believe that, he'll just
fake news."
Yeah,
that came from.
It's fake news. It's all true. And the fact that his cabinet is siding with him and thereby Putin.
Yeah.
To what end? So it's they don't
full
get
full Russian takeover.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, all of the things that Trump was saying, "Oh yeah, well, Biden's a communist. Look out for Kamala. She's a communist." Well, here's Trump actually being a Russian.
Yeah. Yeah. When we were all still struggling to believe the cruelty, incompetence and chaos of Trump's first term, folk on the right would occasionally ask if we could say anything positive about the Orange Madman. The best I could come up with at the time was that I truly believed he'd caused more people to engage in the political process. But I must now admit that I was blinded by all the insanity and accept that there was, in fact, a genuinely positive executive order in 2020 from Trump that I was never even aware of. In my defence, it was part of his response to the killing of George Floyd, and it was rather drowned out by his racist bloviating and his lies about Antifa burning down America's cities and murdering with impunity. However, EO 13929, Safe Policing for Safe Communities, required the Attorney General to propose additional training programs for law enforcement to help them deal with people with mental health and addiction and homelessness issues in ways that de-escalate potentially violent situations and build community engagement. It recommended using appropriate social workers and mental health professionals as first responders, and most importantly, it required the setting up of a national database to track terminations or decertifications of police officers, plus criminal convictions, civil judgments, and resignations for improper use of force, in order to avoid a recurrent problem where police officers who are fired in one jurisdiction just move to another area or agency. Given that this was the summer of 2020, none of it was enacted by the end of Trump's term, but Biden carried many of the ideas through to the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act of 2021, and when that was blocked by the Republican-controlled Senate, he made it happen with his own executive order. The database was set up and by August 2024 contained 4,800 reports of misconduct, saw over 3,000 searches a month by federal agencies, and stopped 25 violent officers getting rehired by other agencies. So, of course, Trump has shut it down.
Yeah.
It was created by Biden, you see. And as the White House explained in a statement to the Washington Post, President Trump believes in an appropriate balance of accountability without compromising law enforcement's ability to do its job of fighting crime and keeping communities safe. But the Biden executive order creating this database was full of woke anti-police concepts that make communities less safe, like a call for equitable policing and addressing systemic racism in our criminal justice system. Yeah. Stopping violent racist cops from just moving to a new town and starting again like some temporarily disgraced Catholic priest is woke, and therefore it's an inevitable problem that there's just no solution to.
Just as the Beatles thumbed their noses at American culture when they did a pastiche of the Beach Boys' surfing sound for Back in the USSR, so Donald Trump continues to take the piss out of the Statue of Liberty's invitation to give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, and is selling a new visa program. Wealthy foreigners willing to pay about $5 million will soon be able to apply for a visa to live in the United States, courtesy of what's being billed as the Trump Gold Card. Gold sneakers and use of gold toilets will, of course, cost extra. When asked by reporters whether Russian oligarchs would therefore be eligible to apply, Trump replied, yeah, possibly. I know some Russian oligarchs that are very nice people. The Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, said all applicants will be thoroughly vetted to ensure they were wonderful, world-class, global citizens. And you just know they're using Trump as the model of all that. The new visa will replace the current EB-5 immigrant investor visa program, which allows individuals to reside in the US in return for job-creating investments of at least $1 million or $800,000 in distressed parts of the country. Whilst one possible impediment is America's unusual tax system, which makes US citizens answerable for US taxes on income earned anywhere in the world, Trump's never bothered paying, so he's not going to enforce that, hey? Meanwhile, he's, of course, enforcing the deportation of millions of undocumented immigrants. See? Irony? Just completely lost on some Americans.
Good news, everyone. Less than 4 weeks into the job, Trump's new head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, has solved the problem of greenhouse gases. You see, the Clean Air Act requires the EPA to regulate air pollutants if it finds that they cause or contribute to air pollution which may reasonably be anticipated to endanger public health or welfare. And in 2009, the EPA concluded that greenhouse gases fit this endangerment criteria. Since then, the scientific research into climate change has only increased the confidence of this finding, but Lee came up with a solution that somehow none of his predecessors at the EPA thought of. And it's kind of genius in its simplicity. He's recommended that they just say they don't endanger public health or welfare. That way, they don't have to regulate them, and all Trump's businessmen friends with big factories can stop worrying about how much carbon dioxide and methane they pump out. David Doniger, senior strategist and attorney for climate and energy at the Natural Resources Defense Council, said, "This decision ignores science and the law. Abdicating EPA's clear legal duty to curb climate-changing pollution only makes sense if you consider who would benefit: the oil, coal, and gas magnates who handed the president millions of dollars in campaign contributions. We will see them in court."
Nice. One refund that DOGE sure won't be going after is the Department of Homeland Security's budgeting up to $200 million to run anti-immigrant ads in the United States and overseas that repeatedly thank President Donald Trump for leading an immigration crackdown. Speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference's Ronald Reagan dinner on Friday night, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem recalled Trump telling her after she was nominated, "We're not going to let the media tell this story because the media will never tell the truth. We're going to run a marketing campaign to make sure the American people know the truth of what you're doing." Noem said that Trump instructed that he didn't want to be in the ads himself because, of course, that would be stretching the credibility too far or something. Instead, he told her, "I want you in the ads. I want your face in the ads. But I want the first ad. I want you to thank me. I want you to thank me for closing the border," she recalled. "I said, yes, sir, I will thank you for closing the border. So if you notice, in that ad, we thanked him for closing the border." Well, at least they managed to fulfill the brief. Thank God for that. That's $200 million of taxpayers' money well spent then. Noem noted that these ads are running not just in the US, they're going to run in the Middle East, they're going to run in Central America, they're going to run throughout the world, letting the world know that America has a new leader. Yeah, because the press won't report any of that stuff, like, for nothing. Yeah, but they do pesky stuff like checking if he actually has done any of the things you said he has, and reporting that possibly no one at all has thanked him for turning America into North Korea. Still, I guess it's a small price to pay to finally establish Orwell's Ministry of Truth for real.
Pardoned Proud Boy Enrique Tarrio and some other pardoned insurrectionists went back to the scene of the crime last week to hold a press conference announcing that they were planning to sue the DOJ for charging them with crimes they definitely committed. While there, he assaulted a woman who was protesting against them and was promptly rearrested, which is fun. Tarrio is by no means the first of the political prisoners freed by Trump to find himself in trouble with the law again. Matthew Huttle was shot by police while resisting arrest after less than a week of freedom. Daniel Ball was rearrested on federal gun charges. Andrew Tark and David Daniel have since been charged with solicitation of a minor and child abuse-related offences, respectively. Some of those cases might be threatened by the vague language in Trump's sweeping pardon, which covers all offences related to events that occurred at or near the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021. In some cases, the additional charges stem from searches carried out incident to the arrest regarding the insurrection, and therefore might conceivably be considered related to those events. That's a problem US District Court Judge Dabney Friedrich is weighing at the moment in the case of Dan Wilson, who faces gun charges related to conduct in 2023 when his home was searched during the January 6th investigation. The good news is that the DOJ agrees that the same consideration doesn't apply to Edward Kelly, who, while pardoned for his part in the insurrection itself, was convicted of plotting to murder the FBI agents who investigated him. You know, I'm beginning to think that some of the January 6th patriots aren't great people.
In the UK this week, Keir Starmer has done his own mini takedown of UK AID, whilst at the same time promising that this was always on the cards when talking up the increase in defence spending from 2.3% to 2.5%. Increasing the defence budget is probably a good thing if Europe as a whole is not going to be supported by US participation in NATO as a deterrent to future Putins. Or indeed future moves from Trump himself to annex lumps of Europe above ground or under Ukrainian soil. However, in order to fund the increase, Starmer cut the UK AID international development budget. Meanwhile, he's flown to Washington to visit Trump, forearmed and preloaded to theatrically brandish an envelope promising, no, not peace in our time, no, not that Trump is fired, but that the king requests the dubious pleasure of Trump's company at Buckingham Palace. I guess that's one way of showing Trump who's king. It also softens up the orange ball sack to make him think he's important, and Starmer can give the king with one hand whilst taking Trump to task about his unilateral decisions about Ukraine with the other. I hope that's what it'll do. But cutting the money the UK sends to aid war-torn and stricken fragile countries to support a large number of people in desperate need in order to appease the tangerine tyrant strikes me as a direct comparison with a recent review of a new Netflix miniseries about British steel poisoning the environment in Corby and the council ignoring it to develop the land for housing called Toxic Town. Britain, it feels at times, is a patchwork of travesties. A population comprised of wrongdoers and the wronged. People are treated as though they don't matter, who are exposed to unnecessary risks and whose concerns are subsequently dismissed. My vision of the progressive left winning the election really did not include it perpetuating that.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our strawman level patrons Chuck Gray, Mike Smith, LT, Colin Lyela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we could just call her Amber. And last year at QED, I met the listener who recognised her at QED the year before, because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Sharon Robinson, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much for your continued patronage. It really is very much appreciated. Thank you.
You can connect with those awesome people, as well as us and other listeners, in the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fallacioustrump or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. And so till next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.